We're continuing on to Parshat Noach. Last time we compared and contrasted two key psukim, one at the end of Parshat Bereishit and one in the middle of Parshat Noach. The one at the end of Bereishit being "V'chol yitzer machshevot libo rak ra kol hayom." We contrasted the concept of rak ra kol hayom. Rak ra kol hayom. We contrasted that to what phrase? To Rami Nu'rav. And we talked about the transition here that happens as we move from one stage to the next stage. That in the Nu'rim stage, it's Rak Rakol Hayom. That a person, on a historical level and also on a personal level, everybody goes through the Nu'rim stage. A stage that's more selfishly oriented, a stage of looking more to fulfill one's physical desires and pleasures, a stage that lacks any sense of boundary. And that one needs to move from the Rak Rak Kol Hayom, which is the Nu'urim stage, but we don't know that yet because we haven't moved out of it, to where we can look back on that stage and say Rami Nu'rav, in which case we will never need a mubble to wipe out the world again. It takes a mubble to wipe out the Nu'urim of the world, and then it would take, meaning, a lot of internal work to wipe out the Nu'urim in every single one of ourselves. But the idea is to move past that to a place where it would never be that God would destroy the world again, because it's only Rami Nu'rav. There's still Ra that exists, perhaps, but never Rak Ra Kol Hayom. That's a reality that won't exist again. Same too by an individual, and they leave their Nu'urim stage, so it can have moments of Ra, they can have things to work on, but we leave the Rak Ra Kol Hayom stage. That happens through the process of the mubble. We have pre-mubble. We go through the mubble, and then we come into a post-mubble world. Now, in thinking about what's happening in this post-mubble world, we have to examine the world as it then exists. Who inhabits the post-mubble world?
Noach, his family.
Who's named? You're already right. Just stick with it.
That's in post-mubble?
I'll take it. Post-mubble world. When we come out of the mubble, let's take a look at it inside. We have three defined individuals. Well, four, including Noach. Take a look at Perek Chet Pasuk. Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Chet. Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Chet. Vayhi b'nei Noach hayotzim min ha'teva, shem Cham v'Yefet. V'cham u'avi Kanaan. Shlosha Eila b'nei Noach, u'mei Eila naftza kol ha'aretz. These three individuals, in fact, we don't emphasize Noach. We're much more interested in this paragraph with Shem, Cham, and Yefet. These become the branches of the entirety of the world. We move from a whole world full of people to just Shem, Cham, and Yefet. What's the transition that takes us from this pre-mubble world to this post-mubble world? It's actually in the name. The mubble itself. If you were to think about it for a second, what is a mubble? When a mubble comes in the world, when the world is flooded, what imagery does that give for us?
Chaos.
Washing machine. Good. What else? Of a world immersed in water.
Quiet.
No oxygen. She said immersed in water, then it sounds like a mic.
Excellent. Right? I mean, think about it for a second. We have the mubble come on the world, and the mubble floods the world. The world is basically immersed in a mikveh. One goes to a mikveh to remove spiritual impurities. One of the primary uses of mikveh is to remove the spiritual impurities that are related to physical desire used in an improper way, or physical desire that doesn't become manifest. A mikveh comes to purify. So the mikveh is coming to purify the pre-mubble world and to bring it into the post-mubble world. Not only is it like a mikveh, but the mikveh, this mubble, comes and destroys the entirety of the world. Svarim talk about how it not only is like a mikveh, but it's actually bringing us backwards in the creation story. What day would we be moving back to?
Second. Six.
Is it six or two? Do we have votes?
Wait, it's just water?
Yep.
Second.
Who said six?
Second.
Why six?
Six. Are we talking about the animals?
No animals. Everybody dies.
Water?
Just water.
Or three. So not six.
What? We should review it again, the days of the creation.
Well, it's not six.
It's not six, correct. And right, I was very surprised by six.
I'm talking about animals.
Two. And brings us back to the second day. The third day, we already see the emergence of life, of plant life, of ground, of dry land. There is no dry land anymore. The world is just water. On the second day, we just have the waters. And we're going all the way back to the second day of creation. We're literally destroying the world back. God is destroying the world back to the second day of creation. And we're starting from a place of no life. Because what the transition that's happening here from pre-mubble to post-mubble is we're literally cleansing away with the mikvah. We're cleansing away all of the impurities of the world in order that the world can then emerge fresh and new, only stemming from this tree, this branch of the tree of Noah and his sons, to come into a new purified world. Ricky.
I'm confused why it's day two if there are components from the other days, meaning there are animals.
Only in the Teva. The Teva is the exception to the rule.
Well, let's say fish.
All the fish died also.
No, they didn't. The fish is actually an interesting question, which we're not going to get into. Okay. Fish for another time. We'll fish another time. Yes.
Bracha. So if Rock Ra was destroyed at this point, and
yes,
the world was purified of that,
yes,
then how come Cham survived?
Because we have to. You're jumping ahead. We're definitely going to have to figure out what's going on with Cham. Let's do that right now. Let's go directly to Cham as long as you're there. Okay. In the Mubble, well, what was your question about Cham? What's wrong with Cham?
Well, like Mitzrayim, which was completely corrupt.
Oh, you're jumping way ahead. Okay, yes, we'll get to you. Give me 10 more minutes, and we'll be exactly where you're at. Okay, fine. Slowly but surely. Cham, we know, doesn't seem to be purified in the same way. We come out of the Teva. Cham goes in and finds his father drunk in the tent. Something negative happens in that tent. Chazal have different interpretations of what that is. It clearly involves something physically inappropriate. Again, different stories of what that is that happened in the tent between Cham and his father. Cham, when he comes out, is clearly not purified. Chazal go even further to show that he didn't even really go through the mubble process. The issue before the mubble that we talked about was, one of the major issues, was that there was no concept of relationship being for the sake of producing, that relationships were not kept in a proper, holy, tahor, kadosh place. And there was an Isser, tells us Chazal, in the Teva, of having a physical relationship between a husband and a wife. On all levels of being, all creations, we're not allowed to. Because in order for us to get from the pre-mubble stage to the post-mubble stage, we have life here, we need to wipe out all life, and then start fresh. And so there was an isser in the Teva of actively pursuing the creation of life during the time where life is being wiped out to be restarted. There were only three individuals, so to speak, in the Teva that violated that isser. Two of them are just food for thought. One of them we're going to talk about. One of them is the Kelev, the dog. One of them is the Arev, the raven, which is very interesting because the raven does come up in the story. And the third one is Cham. Cham violates the isser of having relations in the Teva and has relations with his wife. Yes. What?
Is that how
Canaan comes about? Yes, it's 100%. Yeah, you guys are all, it's great. I'm able to go fast because you guys are already there. That's great. But I'm going to go just piece by piece. Yeah.
What was the midah?
We can talk about it afterward.
Was everything you just said shot?
That's all Chazal.
Okay.
Chazal always works off of Pesukim. I don't know what nuance in the Pesukim they're working out off of. Either way, we see something rotten in Cham in the story with his father afterward, involving Ariot for sure. That's not even a question. But they have this whole story of what actually happened in the Teva, in the Mabul. So even Chazal say it's even deeper than that. He was the one to have a physical relationship in the Teva. He comes and then something negative happens to him after the Teva when he's in the tent with his father. Now, what does that tell us about this process as it relates to Ham?
Didn't work on him.
He didn't go through it. Right, so he's saying she didn't go through it.
Maybe he did go through it, but like he had something. In between like the whole like holding the like scorpion or snake or whatever, maybe he like was holding on to something else. Like he went through it, but it just didn't affect it because he was holding on to...
He didn't let it wash over him,
exactly.
So to speak.
Yeah, he let something come in between.
So he pulls a pre-mubble mentality through the mubble and right out the other side. Cham is the embodiment of a pre-mubble stage in a post-mubble world. Cham is the root of that. Cham is the source of that. Now, Bracha, you jumped again a few steps ahead. There are two particular nations, and what happens next in the Parsha is we actually get a list of all of the generations that come from Shem, Ham, and Yefet. And that was what we just read before, meaning in Pasuk, Perek Tet, Pasuk, Yud Tet, Shlosha Ila B'nei Noach, U'me'ila Naftza Kol Haaretz, the whole world is coming from these three people. These three people are as integral, so to speak, as Adam Arishon. Noach is the new Adam. And he produces three children, and those three children will define, in essence, what the world will be. They're the three roots of the all of what become the nations of the world, which is why the next paragraph lists us all of the distinct individuals who come out of Shem, Ham, and Yefet, who become the 70 nations of the world. If you count them up here, you have all of the 70 nations of the world that come from Shem, Ham, and Yefet. Who are two distinguishable descendants of Ham in particular? Take a look at Perek Yud Pasuk Vav.
Mitzrayim.
We have Mitzrayim. And we have? Kanaan. Now, having just come out of Yom Kippur, at Mincha on Yom Kippur, we read a very particular parsha. Does anybody know what parsha we read on the parsha of Yom Kippur? At Mincha on Yom Kippur? Not what haftarah, what parsha?
It's about
Arayos, what's actually defined as parshata arayot in the Torah. It's the definitional parsha of Arayos. It comes from Sefer Vayikra. Those of you who have a Tanakh, take a look in Parshat Achrimot, Vayikra Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Aleph, Bet, and Gimel. And this is what we just read yesterday at Mincha on Yom Kippur, 2 days ago.
Can you say it again? What is it?
Vayikra, Perek Yudchet. We're starting from Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Limor. Hashem says to Moshe as follows. Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'marta lehem. Tell Bnei Yisrael and say to them, Ani Hashem Elokechem, I am Hashem your God. Kima'aseh, it's very specific. Kima'asei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo ta'asu u'kima'asei eretz Kanaan asher ani mevi etchem shama lo ta'asu u'v'chukoteyem lo te'lechu. And then it goes on to list every single usher relationship there is in the Torah. The embodiment of the two nations that are defined by the Torah as Arayos-oriented nations. Nations who live with a pre-mubble existence. Nations who are unable to control that impulse. They're defined as Mitzrayim and Kanaan by the Torah in Sefer Vayikra and Parshat Achrimot. In the Parsha that's defined as Parshat Arayot. Because Ham takes it all the way through the Mubble, out the other side, through him into Mitzrayim and Kanaan. Questions, thoughts before we go forward?
It's like he smuggled it through.
It is like he smuggled it through. And there was some serious security on both ends. It was the Teva. There wasn't that many people inside. Okay? In Judaism, we assume that names indicate an essence. We see that even in Ham's name. What does Ham mean?
Hot.
Heat. Passion. Uncontrolled impulses. The Maharal links Ham to Chomer, which means physicality. But the two have the same, the two share those first two letters, Ham and Chomer.
Oh my.
So Cham is bringing. Cham is a person who embodies that heat, that passion, that obsession with physicality that leaves him unable to be purified by the bubble, unable to hold by the standards of the Teva, and bring that into and manifest in Mitzrayim and Canaan, and keep him unable to deal with the situation with his father inside of the tent. And so all of his offspring bring this negativity of a pre-bubble state into a post-bubble world. Is there any hope? We still got Yefet and Shame, right? So let's talk about Yefet for a second. What is Yefet related to? What word?
Yafa.
Yafa, Yofi. What does that mean?
Nice.
Beauty is actually more specific. We say Yofi to somebody when they do something good, like nice job, but it means beautiful job, meaning Yofi actually means beautiful. Right? So Yefet is somewhat positive. He's all about Yofi, in fact. He and Shem go in the story with Noah, and they both go in to cover up his father. And Yefet doesn't get cursed by his father. Ham gets cursed by his father. Yefet gets a sort of bracha. Yefet's bracha, I'll see Ham's bracha first just so to see it inside. We're back into these psukim in Parshat Noah, that same paragraph. Pasuk Chavbet, Perek Tet Pasuk Chavbet, Vayar Cham Avi Kanan Et Erbat Aviv, Cham, the father of Canaan, sees the nakedness of his father, and whatever happens there happens. Vayagid L'Shnei Achav Bachutz, and he goes and he tells his two brothers. His two brothers are not pleased. Vayikach Shem Vayefet Et Asimla, Shem and Yefet go take a garment, Vayasimu Al Shechem Shnehem, and they put it on their shoulders, Vayachu Acharonit, they walk in backwards into the tent, Vayichasu Et Erbat Avihem, to cover the nakedness of their father, Ufnehem Achoranit, Verbat Avihem Lo Ra'u. They made sure not to look at his nakedness and to cover up the nakedness of their father with the simla. Noach wakes up and realizes what happens, and immediately he says, Vayomer Arur Kenaan Eved Eved Avadim Yele Achav. He curses out Canaan, that Canaan will be a servant, whatever that means, whatever the implications are. There's a curse that goes to Canaan, who stems from Ham, and by association to all of Ham's descendants. Then he says, Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem, Vayi Canaan Eved Lamo. Shem gets a blessing, and then Yaf Elokim Liyefet Vishkon Boale Shem. The beauty of God is with Yefet, Yaft Elokim Liyefet, and he can dwell within the tent of Shem. Yefet is about beauty. If you were to identify the quintessential, if you think about Jewish history, the quintessential nation that is obsessed with beauty, what nation is obsessed or immersed in beauty?
Greece.
If we look in our chart, what do you expect that we're going to find as a direct descendant of Yefet?
Yavan.
If you take a look at the children of Yefet in Pasuk Bet, Perakut Pasuk Bet, Uvnei Yefet, Gomer, Vamado, Vamadai, Yavan. Yavan is a direct descendant of Yefet, identifying with this concept of beauty, but this beauty only being an external beauty. It's an appreciation for the external beauty of reality, only. How is that even reflected in the Pesukim? Asks Marissa. Right? How is that reflected in the Pesukim? So the way that that Chazal Bekach and Rashi mentions this, meaning they both seemingly went in to cover their father. Why would there be any distinction between Shem and Yefet? Watch the Pasuk very carefully. Vayikach in Pasuk Chav Gimel. It's in Lashon. Yachid. Vayikach Shem v'Yefet. The Torah is very intentional with its wording. Vayikach Shem v'Yefet. That v'Yefet is already enough for Chazal to pick up on the fact that the Torah is indicating to us that Shem goes, Yefet comes along. Yefet thinks that what's happening inside that tent is not proper because it's not nice. It's not physically beautiful. Something happened in there that leaves Noach in an ugly state. So he's willing to go and cover up the physically disgusting image that's left of his father inside of the tent. Yavan is all about external beauty. In Greece, they were all about the physicality of the body. If the body was physical, then it didn't need to be covered. Physical beauty was everything. The fight with Yavan on Hanukkah is not a physical battle, it's a spiritual battle. Yavan originally has no issue with Jews existing physically. They try to erase the Torah, which says that there's spirituality embedded within the physical world. Their issue is that there's nothing past the external physicality. Yefet's a step up, but yet still limited, and that produces a reality of Yavan. Questions about Cham and Yefet, and then we'll go to Shem and call it a day. No, everybody's good?
That was really cool.
It is very cool. That was one of my favorite shirim. It gets cooler, because then we get to Shem. Shame's got a funny name. What's Shame's name?
Name.
Shame equals name. If I were picking a name for my child, I wouldn't pick that because people would make fun of him in school. Right? What does that mean that we're calling Shame Shame? Shame is a name. What is a name? What have we been saying up until now that a name is? What does a name indicate? An essence. So what does Shame's name actually mean?
Essence.
Essence. What Shame is about is that his whole essence is about essence. Shame is all about being connected to the essence that's within all things. Cham is the external impulse and physicality. Yefet is the beautification of the physical, but denies that there's anything inside of that or past that. And shame goes one step past Yefet and is all about the internal essence, the beautiful internal essence that exists inside of everything. That's what shame is all about. What does shame also mean? If you take the words and you put it with different nikudot, Sham. Over there. It's where we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to Sham. We're here on the Eretz Milashon. Nu? Eretz Milashon.
Rats.
Where are we being rats to?
Right.
Sham. What Sham? What you just said. Shamayim, or the Shamim, where all of the Shams are. We're running through this world in order to get there, to the source of all theirs, which is the source of all things. To the root and the heart of all things, to the essence of all things. Through the Eretz, to the Shamayim, which is where all of the Shams are, where all of the Shames are. Shame is the essence. Which is why who inevitably has to come through shame? We do. Kol Yisrael. That's what's going to produce the strain of Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and eventually Am Yisrael. Those are the three branches of mankind. And what the Torah then does is takes those three branches, or rather those, let's call them those three roots, and extends them out and lets them sprout. And we see, and again in that next paragraph, all of the descendants of those two people through, as we said before, Ume'ele Naftza Kol Haaretz. Those from whom the entirety of the nations of the world spread out. Those three are the roots, and extend into 70, which are the 70 core nations of the world. The last piece, and then we'll close. We'll finish out with Dora Palaga after in many weeks. What else do we know has a structure of 70?
17.
The 70 is a Canaan. 70 seems to be an integral number in Judaism in general. We have 70 nations. We have 70 is a Canaan. But it's not exactly 70. It's 70 plus 1. Which is why you won't see in the Parsha Yisrael named as Yisrael yet. These are the 70 nations in the world, but there is one nation that's above all of the other nations, that will supersede all of the other nations, and that's going to be Israel. So Yisrael doesn't get named essentially in this Parsha. It's going to emerge later. There seems to be an integral structure, which we won't talk about now, or in this context yet, we'll get to it slowly over time, of 70 plus 1, which is already being embodied by the nations of the world, as well as what we'll see later on, even in the Shivim Zikanim, which is really 71, the Shivim Zikanim in Moshe, which always ends up being a body of 71. That's the paradigm for the full-fledged emergence of the entirety of the world. All of its branches, all of its roots, where it comes from, moving from the pre-model world to the post-model world, into where we're going to be able, once we get through the last piece, which is Dora Palaga, to start eventually, finally getting to that one particular strain from Shem that will lead us to Abraham. Questions before we close up? Yeah?
Why did Noah curse Canaan if Ham was the one who...
Good question. Anybody else? We can talk about it afterward. But the idea is that it's going to come back from Ham. It needs a better answer than that, but it's relating to Ham. We'll deal with Dor HaPalaga, and hopefully eventually, we will get to Avram Avinu as the essential line that's going to be drawn through all of this pre-Mabul, post-Mabul world, and then be able to start the journey of the Jewish people, Bezrat Hashem, next time. Take a moment to break, and then we'll do...